any general thing.
But the way you have a map, and you have a overview of the diet, so that's aware. So we first explain the map. We are supposed to talk about different Abhidharma traditions. When you read books about Abhidharma, you find very different things. Theravada Abhidharma is quite simple. This is the word of the Buddha. Explained, the Buddha said so in heaven to his mother. I wonder why. Why not to his father? I don't know. Anyway, son likes mother more. Maybe that's the reason.
Yep.
And daughter likes father more, and son likes mother more. Maybe that's the reason why he explained Abhidharma to his mother in heaven. But this Abhidharma in seven texts, it's quite simple, you know. This is what you believe. This is what you study. This is it. But there are other traditions, other schools who do not have this Buddha Bhashita Abhidharma, who do not have this Abhidharma spoken by the Buddha. Only two schools, only two Nikayas have a Buddha Bhashita Abhidharma. Only two. Theravada has one in the seven texts. And in the northwest, Vaibhashika Sarvastivadins, one group of Sarvastivadins, also have it. They also have seven texts. So the only two schools, actually, one school, try again.
Yes.
They have a Buddha Bhashita Abhidharma. You have one, yes? By the way, this morning I was reading a very good article in the library. There's a book that came out last year, 2012. Published in 2012, last year.
Why Theravada is Theravada?
About Theravada. And there was one article in there from an Englishman who says that the oldest use of the word Theravada, it does not really mean Theravada. It means Stavira. It is used for all the Staviras. They're all in Pali. They're all Theras. Yes. So all the Staviras, all the Stavira schools, all have Staviras, all have Thera in Pali. So the oldest use of the word Theravada is actually Staviravada. I was reading it this morning. This book came out last year. So you see, you should always keep reading the new things and always keep finding the new things. You have to do that, you know. Too many scholars just stop at PhD and stop, and for the rest of their life they say the same thing. But actually many things still happen after that. There is life after PhD, you know. So many new things happen. And if you find something new, and all your life you thought something else, and then you find something new, which is true, you must be able to change your mind, you know. You should not be making mistake, because once you make mistake, you always make mistake because you're so stubborn. That's karma. So you should change your mind. Should be able to do that. You know? Very few scholars do that. Very few scholars can do that. Scholars usually one way and go like that. But the road is not like that. The road is like this, you know. The road is like that, you know. But eventually, you become a bit wiser. But you're not always better, from simple to better. Not always like that. Sometimes you go back.
Well, Buddhists know this. No.
People also in history, when I see in some countries, I come in many countries, when I see in some countries, they always think, everybody thinks presence is the best. And the past was bad. And now we're good, you know. So it begins with primitive and very simple people without culture. And then development all the way up to our present day, you know. But it's not like that. It doesn't work like that, you know. I don't believe that, you know. It goes up and down, you know. History does not go up and better all the time. It's not like that. It can go up and then go down, and then go up and then go down. That's how it works, you know. If you look at the history of all great cultures, they have a big moment, and then some dark period, and then a big moment. But every culture like that. We know about anicca, yeah? Everything is impermanent. Also, cultures have this problem, you know. They go up and they go down. This is quite normal. So this, the same for Buddhism. Buddhism has bad periods with difficulty, like when the Tamils were in Sri Lanka. Famine and monks were forgetting, and then the king was restored, and the Tripitaka was written down, and the Buddhism took off again, and the Abhayagiri temple was established. But the Abhayagiri was established by the king, but this was also Theravada at the beginning. It is only immediately after the king, and immediately later there came this problem between Abhayagiri and Mahavihara. And Abhayagiri was open to new things coming from continent, from India, also Mahishasaka things, and Mahavihara was just strictly Theravada. But at the beginning, both of them did not fight. Both of them were the same at the very beginning. But the difference came later, immediately after the king died. So Abhayagiri was not established against Mahavihara. No, it was established to enforce, to make Mahavihara stronger even. But because problems came very soon, and then there was this problem between the two. But at the beginning, it was not like that.
But history and the historians is the different thing in it. Because as long as I remember, there was in the Mahavihara, there was a monk who was tortured and neglected by the Mahavihara monk, and he was sealed, you know, with the iron stick and other something, and he flew to the South India. And before going there, he promised that I will come back and I will break you into the ashes and other things. And he went back there, and finally he got the chance, and he became the very favorite to the king, you know. Because when he came back from the India, he was very favorite to the king. He educated in the India, learned many things.
And he was established in the Abhayagiri.
Yeah, no, he forced the king.
Yes.
Because there was the monk in the Mahavihara who was uncle of the king, you know. Yeah. When he came, he asked the king the name by the name. Usually, if you call the king not by the name, but say something the king or gorgeous king, something like this. But he called directly by the name, and he said, these people doesn't know how to behave with the king, you know. He said, but he is calling by your name. It's not appropriate. And other things. By this way, he got the favor from the king. And later, king appointed him as a teacher for his children, you know. And when the king died, then the prince became king. And he was very favored with the king. Yeah.
But Abhayagiri was already established before king died.
I don't think.
Yeah. The king, it was established before the king died.
Established by that
Mahavihara.
Abhayagiri Vihara was established before the death of the king. The king established it for a friend of his.
Yeah.
Initially there was no problem with Mahavihara. There was only one more Vihara, namely Abhayagiri. Actually, just across the street. It was not meant to have a problem, but later, after the king died, very soon problems began. But during when Abhayagiri was established, it was not a problem. It was not against Mahavihara, but the problem started very soon. This is a Devana Ampiatism.
Yes.
The one who was king when the Tipitaka was written down.
Devanampiyatissa. Yeah. During the history of Tipitaka was written down.
Yeah, written down at the end of his reign. Maybe people now think about 35 BC. I always say BC in AD. You know what it means? Yes, because scholars these days. I say BC.
Before Christ.
Try this one. This means before Christ.
Yeah.
And AD means after Christ. This is Latin. this is Latin. You know, it Latin for in the anno domini. Yeah, in the year of the Lord. This is Latin. Means in the year of the Lord. So that means after he was born. So this is the traditional way. But now, these days, many people say this. Many people use this.
Before Christian era, maybe.
Yes. Before the Christian era. No, don't say Christian era. Common era.
Sorry.
This B is before, no problem.
Yeah.
And the C means common. Exactly, because they want to avoid the word Christian. You know?
Yeah.
So, and this is common era. But before common era and common era, it is still before and after Christ, yes? Only you don't say it. But it's still the same meaning. So, when I was just beginning as a scholar, it was only this. And then I noticed many people writing this. So I thought, oh, maybe I should do that too. I should follow the stream and do the same thing. So I did this. But then, now, I think it's the same thing. It's the same. It's also, this is also BC, you know. It's the same. So, I'm returning to BC and AD now.
No, that's more convenient.
Yes, it's just simple.
Yeah. You know?
And even these days when I write article, and then I write BC, I write AD, but the editor, the people who take the article from me, they always correct me. And they correct to this. If they're happy, okay, you know. I just want to make them happy, that's all. I don't care, but personally, I use this because it's the same thing. And what makes it even more funny is that Christ was not born in the year zero. Maybe you know about this?
Yeah.
It was, I think it was in 6 AD or something like that. It was because when he was born, there was this star in the sky. It is a comet. And people, astronomers, can calculate when this star appears in the sky. So they calculate it and they say, oh, this is the year 6. I forget exactly when. Anyway, it was not the year he was born. traditionally is born year zero, but because of the star and the astronomy, it's not possible for him to be born that. But and in that year, there is no star. Mm-hmm. The star only comes later. You see, so even BC and AD or BCE or CE is not completely correct. There is a difference in years. And people now also start using before Buddha.
Yeah, the same thing is going on, you know. Many people, especially in the Thailand, they consider 2,557 yes. or 8. It's
if you Thailand, found it only Thailand.
Yeah, but some scholars and some Bengali texts I saw over there. One book called the Odimas Vinichaya. It said you should not count the Buddha Varsha from the when Buddha died, you know. But you have to count from the when Buddha gained the Bodhi. That means that you have to add more 45 years.
When Buddha became Buddha.
Yeah. from that time we should count the Buddha Varsha, not the from when Buddha passed away.
But even that does not bring solution. Because when did the Buddha live? This is a very big problem. There are mainly when actually now everybody believes he lived once. He was a real person walking this earth in Nepal, born in Nepal, and then he went to Bihar, you know. He was born in Lumbini, where the capital was Kapilavastu, which is today Nepal. Yes, it's about halfway the mountains. So when you leave your palace, your home, you go down to Bihar. You do not go north up the mountain. No. The civilization was down there in Bihar, in Magadha. Not up there on top of the mountains. So he was born about on the slope of mountains, yes? Halfway, let's say, in Lumbini, in Kapilavastu. And so when he left his house, of course he went down. down to Bhutacharya direction, you know. They couldn't go back up the mountains. So that's why he went there. This is quite simple. He had only one way to go, actually, which was to Raja.
No, he was born there because his mother was traveling to his parents' house.
To give birth.
Yeah.
Yes. Actually, this holding on to a tree and things like that, that's also tradition. There is, for example, the Chinese Buddha Charita. It exists in Chinese version. There, Maya Devi, the mother, does not hold on to a tree and giving birth from the side. It's not like that. In the Chinese Buddha Charita, in the Chinese version, she's lying down on a rope bed called charpoy. You Bengalis must know this. In India, you see it all the time also. You know, so this is some bed and just ropes. Now you also have it in plastic. But, you know, it's called a rope bed. You know what I mean? They put it outside and they sit on it in the daytime and they sleep on it in the night. Yes? They have it in South Asia. It's quite common. It's very, very dangerous now. I mean, the plastic one's okay, but the ropes is full of mice and animals and scratch all the time. It's not very clean. So, but anyway, this kind of bed is quite common in South. So, in the Chinese Buddha Charita, she's lying on a bed like that.
Interesting.
And because she's lying on her side, it looks as if the child comes from the side. You see, it looks as if. Because she's lying on her side, it looks like the child is coming from the side. So this is what the Chinese says, you know. No elephant, no white elephant with 60.
But it wasn't a dream.
It was a dream, yes.
It was a dream,
but in the Chinese version there is no elephant in the dream.
Yeah, by the way, in the Buddha Charita, there is a lot of exotical things.
Yes, and the Chinese one is even more. So,
wow.
The Buddha Charita was written by Ashva Ghosh.
Yeah.
Very strange name, isn't it? Ashvaghosha, the sound of a horse. I don't.
Yeah, he was born in the stable of the horse.
Yeah, that's what they say.
Yeah.
But the sound of a horse, that, well, for such a big figure, what's your name? Sound of a horse. Well, it's very strange, isn't it? No,
there was another thing that while he was he was arrested or arrested by the king, you know, some people came.
Well, there is another explanation.
Yeah, there was another explanation.
There's sometimes, especially in East, in Central Asia or in Northwest India, a horse, especially white one, is he's mentioned instead of elephant. You know, the white horse arrives in China. You know? The white horse takes the sutras through Central Asia, not an elephant.
Mm.
And it's a white one. So the animal changes. It's a different animal. It's not an elephant, it's a horse. And so this Ashvaghosha, the horse has a good meaning.
Yeah.
Right? That's why, but still. No. and he was a Brahmin. It's another thing. Many Brahmins became Buddhists. You know, Buddha did not support Brahmins. Buddha never spoke one word of Sanskrit. Buddha he was also not opposed to Brahmins, because if he opposes Brahmins, that's karma. And if you have Bodhi, you do not support and you do not oppose. Brahmins were just Brahmins.
But when they talk about the Sanskrit during the Brahmin times, it said Sanskrit was the language of the high class.
Yes, Sanskrit, true, yes.
So the when the high class is there, the lower class is not familiar with the Sanskrit, I think.
But the Buddha was a Kshatriya.
Yeah.
He was the second class. He was the ruler class. The, not only ruler, but also bankers.
Yeah.
And business people, and the fighters, the army people. So those, that kind of class, that's what he belonged to. But he actually never supported Brahmins. He was not opposed to it, but everybody can use his own language. You should not use Sanskrit. Everybody can do that. The only thing that was important is the year of your upasampada, of your full ordination. After your full ordination, then you're outside of the system. Whether you're a Brahmin or not, that's not important. Brahmin can also be monk, of course. But nothing special. Nothing special. It's just another monk among monks, and he becomes special when he's older. When he becomes a stavira.
In the sutra, we can find that Buddha mentioned that this monk came from the Brahmin family.
Yes, there were many. That's one thing which always strikes me very much. So many Buddhist converts were Brahmins. So many.
Yeah.
Shariputra was one.
Yeah.
Moggallana was one. Even on his deathbed, the last conversion he made before he died in Kushinagara was a Brahmin, Subhadra.
Yeah.
And later so many Brahmins converted to Buddhism. So many. So it's very strange, isn't it?
Yeah.
And Buddha never supported Brahmins. Everybody could speak his own Prakrit. Actually, I can talk Dutch. Buddha would not oppose that. Everybody can preach the Dharma in his or her own language. You can do it in Vietnamese. No problem. Buddha would not oppose that. He would not. Everybody can do it in his own language, his own speech.
But teacher, there is a problem when you use the own language. Okay?
Yes.
When you say own language, when Buddha's own language, Buddha using his own language.
No,
everybody. It doesn't mean that when you are talking
Sakkaya, Sva. You're saying the own language does not mean the Buddha language. Everybody can do and because actually he was not saying you should speak Magadhi. Anyway, what did the Buddha speak?
We don't know.
Yes. Anyway, I don't. I don't know. We know he was born in Lumbini, near Kapilavastu there. And we know he went down to Bihar. By the way, Bihar means Vihara. Did you know that?
Maybe several languages.
Bihar, the province, the Indian province of Bihar.
Yes, it's still Bihar.
It means, the Sanskrit, Vihara, temple. Because there are so many temples there in the old days.
Because during the Buddha's time?
No, after he died. That's the name. The name is more recent than that. But Bihar means Vihara. Yes, that's the truth. And also Mahavira comes from there. So there were not only Buddhist temples, but there were many temples there in Bihar. Bihar, Vihara. Maybe you knew this already. No? This is a very, you know, the province of Bihar. Yes? And the Biharis?
Bihari.
Bihar?
Bihar.
You know, present day Bihar?
It's the same, yeah.
Yes, today it's province, yes. Yeah. And today capital is Patna.
Yeah.
And that's the old Pataliputra. Patna. It's Ashoka's capital. Pataliputra. That's Patna today. It's in Bihar. On the Ganga. It's in the day before Ashoka, even in the time of the Buddha, the capital was being shifted, replaced, moved from Rajagriha, which is Rajgir today. It was moved from there to Patna, to Pataliputra. Even in the Buddha's old, when Buddha was getting old, then the capital was moved to the Ganga, already in those days, but was not yet complete. But after the Buddha died, the capital was in Patna, Pataliputra. That's Bihar. Bihar means, and Bihar means Vihara. Maybe I should have some water. I can put it in the water.
No, let's choose the wrong one here.
I always choose the wrong one.
Yeah.
I'm famous for choosing the wrong thing. Thank you for helping. No, Bihar means Vihara. Vihara means temple. So in Bihar there used to be many temples. But in from Rajagriha, Rajgir, today is Rajgir, and Gundrakuta Parvata, the vulture peak, is just outside of Rajagriha, just outside of Rajgir. You can go there now, it's quite near, it's almost in the city now. You can take a cable car up, and there's a Japanese temple on top now. So in Bihar, so it's still there. Many monkeys there, it's very dangerous to walk. You only have monkeys at a certain height in the mountains. Monkeys are in high places, up mountains. And Mount Gundrakuta has many monkeys. So when you walk there, better take a stone or a stick, because monkeys are very, well, they're just monkeys, you know. if you drink some Coca-Cola, they will come and take it away from you. Then always take the food from you and always take your things out of your pocket. So it's very, very unpleasant. When there are monkeys around, you better be careful. But it's always in the mountains. And Mount Gundrakuta has many, many of those. And even big ones. But the Buddha does. Well, there are caves in Mount Gundrakuta. And actually, the first Sangiti was held in a cave there. Yes. So, Kashyapa was there. Yes. In the first year after the death. In the time of the Buddha, monks did not live in a monastery. You know that? Monks never did not live in monasteries. Monks were moving around all the time. Monks were roaming. traveling. And they only stayed for 3 months in one place during rainy season. Mm. Because it's not very convenient to travel in the rainy season. So they stayed for 3 months in one place and then started traveling again. I never stayed in one place. Buddha never stayed in one place. It was always traveling around. And the first year after he died, the monks still were not living in Vihara. They were roaming monks, traveling always. It is only later, little by little, that this 3 month period became 1 year and 2 years and always like that. You see, so but it started from 3 months in the rainy season, and it became the habit to stay in that place longer than the rainy season. And so that's how the vihara started. There are two kinds of vihara, you know. The viharas built by the monks themselves, or the aramas, which they receive from lay people, like Jetavana. They can have a gift of a building from lay people. Usually they call it arama. You enjoy the gift. And the monks themselves, they just build vihara, place to stay. Vihara means, viharati means you dwell, a dwelling.
Abiding.
Yeah. That's all. So there are different kinds. You build it for themselves. This is an old, very old habit, you know, monks making their own vihara. Even in China, this is still. You know, even in China, I tell you, you know Kumarajiva.
Yeah,
he's my preferred figure. I like Kumarajiva because he has so many weak sides. He's very, very similar to everybody, to normal human. Xuanzang and all those monks, they are so high, so holy, that they're too far away from me, actually. So I like people who are much closer. And we have all the problems and all the weaknesses of normal people. And Kumarajiva is like that. But he did great things, but he also knows he did very bad things. He said, one time he said that he was like a lotus on the mud, you know, it's in filth. When you take the lotus, you do not take the filth. But he identified with the filth also. So all of what he means is only take my work, my sutras, Lotus Sutra, Vimalakirti Nirdesha, only take that. This is the lotus, you should take that. Not the bad things. Don't look at the bad things. Leave the bad things I do. He knew this. He was not a Vinaya specialist. Anyway, what I mean is when he arrived in the Chinese capital, when he arrived in Chang'an, when he arrived there, they made a hut for him with a thatched roof, mm-hmm. a very simple dwelling. And even the temple today in China is still called like that. It's still called the grass hall, something like that. Because when a monk arrives, you make a small place for him to stay. And that's what happened for Kumarajiva when he arrived in China. He also. So this is I'm talking about 480, which is quite late, yes. But this habit continues. When a monk comes to a temple, you can building a small hut for this person to stay for a while, and then the monk will move on. This is 400 AD, and the year of the Buddha. Yeah, let's talk about the year of the Buddha. I was telling you, when did the Buddha live? I don't believe the Thai date.
Okay, I'm not telling you. I'm just saying that.
Yes, true. But there are so many, mainly two traditions. Mainly two. They call it the long and the short chronology. The long dating and the short one. The short one means Buddha lived more recent, 100 years after people thought he was living. maybe 100 years before Ashoka. After, that's the short tradition, okay? So they have two traditions. One is the long one, and this is the Theravada one. In Theravada tradition, more or less, Buddha dies in 482-83 BC.
Yeah.
That's 483 maybe BC he died. This is based. These calculations are based on Theravada tradition.
443.
And so it was 80 years before that he was born. Yes?
Yeah, 523.
Yes, 80 years old. He was 80 years old.
Yeah.
Why didn't he live 100 years? Why did Buddha not become 100 years?
480.
Good question, right?
Yeah.
Because one ayus, long life, means 100. So if you live your complete life, all your ayus sanskaras make you live 100 years. Normally, maximum. But the Buddha himself did not do that. Why?
Because no one requested him.
Because Mara.
Mara? Mara? Yes. Middle Mara?
No, no. Yeah. I'm saying there are two.
In a way, you're right. in a way, you're right. Because before he became the Buddha,
yeah,
he lived in the palace.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm. And so he did karma.
Yeah. His karma works?
So, and this, if you act, his karma took away from his 100 years of life. It's an Indian way of thinking that if you live in a bad way, you die soon. If you live good, you live long. If you live in a, well, very bad way, I don't have to explain what bad is, then your life is short. Bad people don't live long. That's what they say, and that's the tradition. So 100 years is the maximum. But before he became the Buddha, when he was living in the palace, he had a son, you know.
Yeah.
He had karma, and this made his life shorter. So because of the period, his karma in the period before the Bodhi, this period, this action is responsible for the fact that he did not make it to 100.
But karma is not the factor that can modify or identify something that effect on that.
Well, Buddha had karma before he got the Bodhi. Before he became the Buddha, he did karma. Yes?
Yeah.
Yeah, that's
for sure.
Before he became the Buddha. And his becoming the Buddha is probably also the result of karma.
Yeah.
Yes. So it's anyway, it's the karmic reason why he does not live an ayus of 100 years is before his period before the Bodhi, they say.
There are two more interpretations,
yes,
given by the Tripitaka.
Yes,
it said that one is the while he attained enlightenment, there was a Mara who asked something for him. And he promised that he would give, you know. And when the Buddha was giving the ayusanskara, visarjana, that means the giving up, that time it was requested by the Mara. It says one interpretation. And another interpretation, it says that Buddha tried to convince the Anandada, asked that not to give up the ayusanskara. But Ananda did not understand. That's why he was scolded in the first council that you did not ask the Buddha to live long.
Yes, actually when his ayu samskaras were all used up, Buddha decided to prolong his life.
Yeah.
Because it was not yet time to die. He still prolonged his life.
Can you explain all the cases by
anyway,
the karma?
What I think this 80 years is a very common figure for very wise people in Buddhism.
Mm.
Yeah. No? Vasubandhu lived
more than
80 years. Vasubandhu, the great scholar,
yeah,
also 80 years. Many people, great scholars, great wise people, lived 80 years. I don't know why. Is there something about this figure 80? I don't know. I don't know.
Even over 80, maybe he cannot teach him because because of the even he's so wise, but he cannot.
That is a moral element, you know. The average age in those days was about 40. Average age when was quite low, much lower than today. So the average age, so someone who is 80 already lived twice the normal period. You know, it was very long in India in those days, even in India today. You know. One mosquito bite may kill you. You know, it's a very long time, 80 years.
80 years.
Even today, it's a long time, but in those days, it was a very long time. 40 years normally, and then you pass away.
Ananda lived 120 years.
Well, yes, and Bodhidharma was 150 years when he arrived in China. But I don't believe it. Ananda, Bodhidharma.
Bodhidharma
was 150 when he arrived in China,
yes.
in Canton, in Guangzhou.
Yes.
That's what they say. Yes, that's what they say. But anyway, let's not focus on this number. Let's just say he was not young anymore.
Yeah.
Okay?
Okay?
We can all agree on that. And in 80 years for the Buddha, okay, more or less. For someone with a long life, and the Buddha lived very long, with his body about 35 years old. By the way, it's a very important age in life, 35. If you look at other important figures, Christ was about 30, about the same age. Other people who start very strong movements, usually 30, 35. And that is usually when they found the new religion or whatever you may call it. It's not only the Buddha who was in his 30s. So it must be an important age, by the way. And then he was preaching for 45 years. Yes?
It's
very long time. But he was always preaching in the same area. Always preaching in Bihar. Also in Uttar Pradesh. He went as far as Mathura. You know Mathura?
Western.
Still today. If you take the train in Delhi, you go to Agra, you pass by Mathura to the south. So in Mathura, it's still there. He went as far as Mathura, but not beyond that. And he did not like Mathura. Too much dust. And he didn't like it. He didn't go again. Only once, okay. But he did not go beyond that. The rest is story, you know. He was supposed to go to Gandhara, to Pakistan. No, don't believe it. He didn't go to the Bay of Bengal. He did not go to Sri Lanka.
Sri Lanka, they told that they put that and went to the country 3 times.
Let me say, I can say to this, if people feel good believing that, they should.
Yeah.
You know, if people feel good believing that, there is no harm there.
Yeah.
And if it brings them peace of mind, then they should do that.
Put that there.
Yes.
Yeah.
I'm quite convinced it's okay. I'm sure that the Buddha himself, if he were alive today, that I often wonder, what would he say when he would come in now.
Yeah.
What would he say about 2030, this year? I often wonder about that, you know. I don't think he would recognize his own Buddhism. But I'm sure, being the Buddha, he would say, if it brings you peace of mind, it's okay.
Sure.
You know?
Sure.
It's, even if you do not use Buddhism and it brings you peace of mind, that's okay. I'm sure he would say something like that.
Yeah.
He does not, no karma, yes? He does not want to convince you, you know, but he will just give you what works for him. Four Noble Truths, Pratitya Samutpada, that's the basic. That's what he found. And he will give it But you are free to take it. And if you think you are happier if you do not take it, I'm sure the Buddha would be the first to say, okay. But maybe later you may change your mind. But this is that's the way it works. So he lived from, he died 483. They come to this date. Actually, scholars also come to this date. It's Ashokan inscriptions that make us say this. Ashoka, at the border of his empire, he put inscriptions, yes? He put texts all around the border places of his empire, written in Kharoshthi in the northwest, in the local language, in the local writing system, like a good Buddhist. Everybody can use his own language, yes. So Ashoka did that in the different places. And in some of those inscriptions, there are some information about date. First of all, the date of Kanishka himself, of Ashoka himself. Because the date of Ashoka, it is only very recently that we know, more or less, this is the 3rd century BC. Before the British went to India, the Indians forgot about Ashoka. Ashoka, they didn't know Ashoka. Now he is in the Indian flag, yes?
Yes.
But they did not know him.
Really?
They forgot about him. It's archaeology that brought back the Ashokan the palace in Patna and the Bodh Gaya temple. That is recently found by Cunningham. That's an English army general who actually is not very famous for his army, but for his cultural activities. Some people are famous for that. They're not interested in the war, they're interested in the culture, so they do some local useful work. So this Bodh Gaya was found again, and Ashoka was rediscovered in India itself, not talking about Sri Lanka.
No, I'm not thinking about Sri Lanka.
Okay. I don't even know where you come from, but I don't know. It's sure not Sri Lanka. But anyway, the Indians forgot about it, and they rediscovered him. So they did not pay attention. Actually, Indians never pay attention to history.
They never write down?
Never. And even if they write down, they have different systems of dating. In different places of India, the first sure date in Indian history is when the Greek Alexander was in the northwest.
300.
Yes, 317, something like that. That is a fact because the Greeks wrote it. So that's he was in India.
He should go more on it.
This is the first certain Indian date. Indians don't care about dates. They say they only care about the message, you know, that they talk. And they talk and they discuss. Most Indians are lawyers in the world. In Malaysia, the lawyers are mostly Indians. So they talk very well. The argumentative Indian is a stereotype. You know, they're always talking, talking, talking. So, and they only talk, but they do not care about the where and the when.
Yeah.
They do not care much about that. So they don't pay attention to this. The Chinese do. Europeans do. The Chinese also always know this text was written in that year, that month, that day, that temple, that room, and accompanied by this and this person, and this person did that, and they got it. It's very well written down. It's like an official writing down the whole thing, you know. This is so for Chinese culture, this is so for European culture, not for Indian culture. Indians don't give this information. They only talk about an argument, well, the argumentative Indian, yes?
There is a very famous saying here. He said that don't try to find out where the medicine is made, how made, or who made You know, don't. Just if you are sick, just take it. You will be cured.
Or more sick.
Yeah.
Yes. 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 It's true. It's true. That's what the Indians do. That's their idea. It's, but as I said, Ashoka, they forgot about them.
Yeah.
And so the to reconstruct the history of in India, you go back from Alexander, you go to the Ashokan inscriptions, and based on the Ashokan inscriptions, you calculate the death of the Buddha. You see, that's how it works. Alexander, Ashoka, and his inscriptions, and then the date of the death of the Buddha. You can it can be reconstructed based on Ashokan inscriptions, the death of the Buddha. And it should be 483, something like that. But this is more or less in agreement with Theravada tradition. But there's another tradition in the north, in Sarvastivada tradition, and translated into Chinese. And they do not say 483, they say maybe 383. 100 years difference. There are two traditions, the long and the short. And the short one is this northern one, based on Chinese material. But I believe the long one. Because, I'll give you the reason, because the short one is based on one Chinese text, which says that Ashoka comes about 100 years before the death of the Buddha. But 100 years, yes, there's a Chinese source that says
before the death of the Buddha.
After the death. So, yeah, Ashoka later, of course. Yeah. 100 years, it says 100 years. But if you, and so scholars started calculating 100 years. But actually, 100 years in Chinese means a very long time. It does not mean 100 years. It means a long time. So when this Chinese source says that Ashoka comes 100 years after the death of the Buddha, it means a very long time. Not exactly 100 years. But scholars started taking their calculator and calculating and think 100. And that's why they come up with a short chronology, with a short dating, more recent, based on Chinese northern material. So, but I still hear those two, but I believe the long one, 483. By the way, very recently, last week actually.
Archaeology.
Yes.
They rediscovered something.
Yeah, you saw it in the newspaper?
Yeah, I saw it.
Yes. Yes, in Lumbini, yes. Mm-hmm. They found something and they say Buddha lives in the 6th century BC.
Yeah.
Yes. If he dies in 483 and he was 80 years old,
yeah,
he lived in the 6th century. Yes.
Yeah, 6th century.
Yes. So this, and this will now be, and now I see many scholars reacting to this news and saying yes and no and that, and there will be a new panel in a conference next year in Vienna, in Europe, about these new discoveries and all that. It's good, you know. That's good. It's good if people do this. It's all right. It's, if it gives them peace of mind, this is very good. But I believe in the long tradition, in the 483, based on the Ashokan inscriptions. And this was established finally by an Indian friend of mine, by A.K. Narayan, if you know him. He died recently. A.K. is an archaeologist. He died recently, and he calculated this Ashoka date and the death of the Buddha, and he wrote about this, and he said a final definitive proof for the death of the Buddha. But he had very strong convictions, but what is proof, you know? I also say, I very often say that in many places, what is proof? I can give you proof after proof after proof. If you do not believe my proof, it's not proof. Yes. I can give you, yeah. If you do not believe my proof, then it's not a proof. is it? So I say in Buddhism we do not work with proof. It doesn't work like that. We only work with probability, maybe, possibly, likely, not likely, things like that, you know. That's how Buddhist studies work. It's probably like that, most likely like that, very not likely to be like this, and things like that. But really, proof? No, we don't. It doesn't work like that. It's proof is not like that. It's no. Some people immediately understand if you give them five clues, five hints, they can see the picture. Some people, you're going to have to give them 10, 20 clues, still don't see it, and they will be asking for proof. but you see, we only work with probabilities, with maybes and likelihoods and things like that. So this, my friend Eke Narayan, he said 483, this is the proof, Ashokan inscription. Maybe 100 years later we find another inscription that says something else, I don't know. But right now, the most likely date of his parinirvana is 483 BC, I think, in 80 years. That would put him in the 6th century in Lumbini, in the Maya Devi temple. Yes. In Lumbini.
Yeah,
they made it.
Yes. They put a temple on it. Yeah. Ashoka went there. Ashoka visited.
It's a very small temple.
Yes. Mm. But Ashoka went there to see. Ashoka went on pilgrimage. Mm. He visited Buddhist places. And he also went to the place of birth, to Maya Devi temple over there. Maya was a very good name, isn't it? Maya, what does it mean, Maya?
Affection?
Yes.
Maya actually is called in the two sense. One is the evil sense, and other one is the good sense. When it is used as a good sense, it's called like affection or how to say that one? Karuna, you can say, similar. But when you use the Maya, that means that when in Bengal literature we use the Maya is the one kind of illusion.
That's a normal meaning in Sanskrit too.
Yeah.
Illusion.
Yeah.
Some. Yes. Illusion. Something you see in the mind. You're something which is not really there, but some illusion. Yes. Some Maya, but this can be of course the next step can be affection, because you can get this Maya because of your affection. This Maya can be there, your confusion, your illusions can be there because of your affection. But this is a derived meaning, a second stage meaning. It's first means illusion, and usual. Your meaning was the second one. Yes, and a positive one. But Maya was the, and they call her Maya Devi. Yes.
You know, when Bengali word is that we use two words, Maya, Mamata. Maya is the affection, and Mamata is also affection. Like this.
In Bengali, Maya means affection?
Yeah, something like this. Because when you describe the Buddha's life story in Bengali like this, he was, how to say, cutting the bondage of his children, and this is called the Chinno Maya. You know? Chinno means the cutting, and Maya means that he is cutting the relationship. But it's not the cutting, but in the mantra, you know? So there is the Maya one.
Anyway, the connection, the thing which binds the two meanings is the illusion and the affection.
Yeah.
Yes.
Yeah.
You can imagine, you can understand why these two meanings happen.
It's possible. Mamata, whatever he said, Maya Mamata.
Yes.
Mamata is the one thing only goes to the mother's love, not others. The mother's love can be described as the mamata, but other there is no way to describe the love of the mother. But when it is the maya, there is another use. When it is an illusion, with the magic, you are showing some magic.
Yes, the East Asian Chinese translation of maya is always illusion or wild horses, ye ma,
yeah,
or huan. Yeah, so it's something you see in your with the mind's eye in your mind, which is not there. This is the Huan. Yeah, this is the, well, that's her name. She immediately died, officially of happiness, unofficially because of an infection.
Yes.
Yes, officially because overjoyed.
Yeah.
Yes, that's what the Buddhacharita says.
Yeah.
That's what the biography says. But it is very common to die in childbirth.
Yeah.
Probably something like that happened. And he was raised by his aunt, yes?
Yeah.
Who became the first nun.
Yeah.
Who became the first nun, who was a very strange one. The first nun. So Buddha was not well in his days. When we're talking about the year about 500
BC,
you know, this is very long ago.
Yeah.
He was not opposed to women becoming nun. Of course, Ananda had to insist, and Prajapati had to insist, and finally he agreed. But he agreed. He agreed that there should be nuns. He agreed. Ananda was the one who convinced him, and Prajapati also helped, did her part, but he agreed. In 500 BC, in a time when women were not very strong in social position. But already 500 BC this happened. So I would say Buddhism is very, very modern like that.
Yeah.
In 500 BC this already happened. You know, in Thailand today this is very difficult to think,
even
you know.
Right,
or even in Tibet, you know. This is very difficult. Many traditions do not have nuns, do not have upasampada for nuns.
Yeah.
Chinese have it. Traditionally, Sri Theravada also have it. You have Thedis.
But not officially.
Thedi gatha, you have Thedis. But this, now it's the point of discussion. But traditionally, the Buddha himself said, okay. He did not say okay, he did not speak English, but I am sure he would, in Sakaya Nirutiya he would say yes. And this is what happened. It's quite new. Prajapati, and she died.
But I think, teacher, recently whatever they have found in archaeology and other
Lumbini,
things,
yes.
It has some political sense and other things. Because
also,
there was a debate when you ask the Indian, where is the Buddha born? They say in India. They don't like to say they're in the
true
Nepal, you know?
True.
Yeah. That's how recently I have read one article written by the Thai. He claiming that Buddha was born in Thai, you know, and shows some evidence and so other things.
Well. I can tell you, I quite know what you're talking about. I go to many places.
Yeah.
I very often go to India. I very often go to China. I very often go to many places.
Yeah.
And everywhere I hear people who are very proud. And they want the Buddha to be theirs, Buddha Gosa to be theirs, and tradition, their tradition is the right one, and things like that. And I see so many traditions and all that. My conclusion, always, is if this brings you perfect rest, it's okay. It's all right, you know. If this is the way it makes you feel good, that's good. You know, it's as long, but you should not use this to fight others or to say this is wrong. And never say somebody is wrong. That's also you should never say wrong. It's not very Buddha. Buddha never said he's wrong. You can never find it in one sutra. Buddha saying he is completely wrong. You do not find that.
He never said it.
No, it doesn't do that. It's, you just say what is right. You say what is right. He just said what is right. And actually, do we know what the Buddha said? That's another question.
Yeah.
You know, this Abhidharma. So we'll finish with Abhidharma after all. This Abhidharma, which is spoken by the Buddha in heaven to his mother, by the Theravada tradition. We don't know this, yes? Nobody was there. His mother was there, but his mother was dead. So, the second one is the Vaibhashika. They are Sabha. So, one group of Sarvasti Varapi in Kashmir. One group in Kashmir, one Sarvastivada group in Kashmir, they also have this Abhidharma spoken by the Buddha to his mother in heaven. And it's not the same one. It's not the same one.
Their Abhidharma different?
Their Abhidharma is the seven texts, but it's not the same text. If Buddha is supposed to have said the seven Theravada texts, just like that, every word like that, and that's what they say happened, then it's not completely the same as this Vaibhashika thing. So the Buddha said two different things to his mother in heaven. According to Theravada, has one tradition, Sarvastivada. I call it Vaibhashika. I will explain in the next days more and more about this Sarvastivada thing, which is very important for Buddhism, especially for Abhidharma. But let me just say there, Vaibhashika, we don't know what he said. We don't even know what he said in the sutras. You know, the sutras are supposed to be the word of the Buddha, spoken by the Buddha. Yes, it's true. Ananda, evam, maya, shuttam, ekasmin, samaye. Thus have I heard once in Buddha. And then, thus have I heard, meaning Ananda. He heard this from the Buddha. But Ananda was very close to the Buddha for 45 years. But even if you are very close to someone, and even if you're very smart, can you remember exactly every word after 45 years? I cannot. I'm not Ananda, I'm not Arhat. But anyway, it's very difficult to remember exactly which word he used. So, I think we will never know exactly what, we don't even know the language he spoke. It must be some Magadhi, but what kind of Magadhi? Maybe some Kapilavastu kind of Magadhi? I don't know. Maybe he knew more than one dialect? I don't know. It doesn't say so. He never wrote. We don't know. So what did he exactly say? Every word. When I see scholars discussing a word, should be this, should be that. Actually, Buddha probably didn't say it exactly like that. But it is not important to know. What is important is that it is according to the Dharma. This is important. If the content of a sutra, if the words are according to the Dharma.
What do you mean by Dharma?
The Buddha Dharma. The Buddha Vachana.
Okay.
Okay. If the Buddha could have said it, it's true.
Yeah.
Because some sutras are not even spoken by the Buddha. Some sutras are spoken by important disciples. And sometimes the Buddha said, agreed.
Yeah.
And said, I almost said again, okay. Very often the Buddha agreed, but not always. So if the content is in accordance with the Buddha Dharma, with the Buddhist Dharma, then it's okay. It should not be word for word exactly like that. You know, So, because I do not believe that Ananda even remembered each and every word after 45 years, even if he's very talented, even then you make mistakes. But this is a discussion which in the Buddhist world is very, very important. What did the Buddha exactly say? You know? But is this question really important? I think you can today in Thailand, someone can write a sutra today in Thai. If the message is very Buddhist, according to the right doctrine,
of course there are sutras.
You can say this is the word of the Buddha.
No,
because it agrees with the words of the Buddha.
Yeah, there are some sutras in the Thai which were composed by that king,
mm-hmm.
but it's not related to the Buddhism, but trying to remove some Indian context, like the Om and other ideas which exist in the society. So he just wanted to remove those things and put some idea, Buddhistic idea, and written some Pali verses. Which one is nowadays the monks are chanting around that?
There are four seals to prove is Dharma or not Dharma.
Well, the Buddha, some things we are sure he spoke. And the Four Noble Truths, Pratityasamutpada, you could not change that.
Yeah. This is main teaching.
So, but these exact words, how did he exactly say, explain Pratityasamutpada? I don't think even Ananda would do that. Anyway, it's maybe not important, you know?
Yeah.
It's just the message. It's what it means for us. That is important.
Yeah.
It is not just what he exactly said. When you have a Buddha Bhashita Abhidharma, an Abhidharma which is spoken by the Buddha, of course everybody knows he did not speak it in this while he was alive. He never spoke Abhidharma in his 80 years of age. So he should have spoken it to his mother in heaven, somewhere else where nobody could check it, you know. So it was in heaven.
But it was in the heaven, how it came to the earth.
But there is Abhidharma.
Abhidharma.
I'm coming back to to conclude today. I'll just say, what does the word Abhidharma mean?
Higher Dhamma.
Yes, that's what the Buddhists say. But there is a second meaning about Dharma. It's
if Buddha preached Abhidharma in heaven,
yes.
How can he get Abhidharma in earth?
Yes. I don't believe he said that to his mother in heaven.
Yeah.
Personally, I don't believe it, but I believe in Abhidharma.
There is a
who bring
commentary
from heaven to earth.
Okay. In the commentary, there is one saying that when Buddha was in the heaven, that time he used to come to the earth to take the mail.
But this whole heaven story means everybody knows it was not in the world. Everybody knows that. Buddha never spoke sutras, but he taught, but he did not talk. He did not teach Abhidharma. Abhidharma is out of this world. Abhidharma, coming back to the meaning of the word, and this is to conclude, Abhi Dharma, it all depends on the meaning of Abhi. If Abhi means Shrestha, higher, then Abhi Dharma means higher Dharma. And this is what the Buddhists, many Buddhists themselves believe. But even the Buddhist texts themselves say Abhi can also mean about, concerning. So Abhi Dharma means about the Dharma. Abhidharma is about the Dharma, so you use the Dharma to teach. And non-Theravada, non-Vaibhashika people, they have Abhidharma, but they use the Dharma, they talk about the Dharma, they use the Dharma to teach how to become Arhat. So their Abhidharma are practical meditation manuals, meditation texts, teaching how to advance mentally, So there's a practical purpose for that. And that was written by acharyas, by teachers, by people with disciples, and so they have this practical method using the Dharma. They use the Dharma, they are talking about the Dharma, Abhi Dharma. But this Abhi Dharma is not explained by the Buddha in heaven, because when it is explained by the Buddha in heaven, it is not used to become an arhat anymore. You just take it. This is, as a believer, you believe it, or you don't, or you believe it. But if you have another tradition where you have Abhidharma Shastras, Shastra means teaching. If you have a teaching which teaches, text which teaches us how to advance mentally, become Arhat eventually, this Abhidharma text is not spoken by the Buddha in heaven. People in India explain this. And a disciple went to one teacher, listening to his Abhidharma, and it worked for him or it did not. He was happy or not. And this disciple could go to another teacher and he could teach something a little bit different. And that would, maybe the disciple would be satisfied and then he would stay. Or maybe not completely satisfied, he can go to another acharya. So anyway, Abhidharma Shastras are texts or explanations to teach mental development, to teach how to become arhat. But if you have this kind of an Abhidharma, that's different. This is spoken by the Buddha in heaven. This is not to teach us how to become an arhat. In this way, you establish the truth. This is not the purpose is not practical. But other schools, other traditions have a practical purpose. Actually, only these two have this Abhidharma spoken by the Buddha. All the others do not have that.
Because it has a particular author.
And Abhi means about. In Chinese it's Tlefa, Ba, the Dharma. But it's also the higher Dharma, yes. Shrestha Dharma. That's also the interpretation. And if you like Abhidharma, I think you would say it is higher Dharma. Yes? If you use it objectively, it's about the Dharma. If you like it, if you get emotionally involved, you see it's the higher one. This is a... Anyway, it has those two meanings. Abhi. The official translation of Abhidharma is higher Dharma or about the Dharma. This is true. And this is spoken by the Buddha in heaven, but all the others just give you explanations how to become arhat. Let's continue tomorrow.
Thank you, sir. Yes. Thank you,
sir. Watch out for the dogs.
Thank you. See you tomorrow.
See you tomorrow.